Hello and welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors and artists on books, movies, DVDs, collectibles, pretty much anything to do with the national pastime. If it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. I have to admit, when I first heard that R.A. Dickey's memoir, Wherever I Wind Up, My Quest for Truth, Authenticity, and the Perfect Knuckleball, contained information about his sexual abuse as a child, I thought, here we go again, another celebrity who has to come up with an angle to sell an otherwise average story. Well, I humbly apologize. Dickey's honest and excellent book is really about the difficulties every athlete, indeed every person, faces on a regular basis. Of course, we don't all have to deal with the trauma of abuse, thank God. But we all have our moments of doubt and worry. Dickey's religious faith helped him through these crises, although it's always a struggle. My review of Wherever I Wind Up was included in my annual baseball book roundup on bookreporter.com. Dickey is more than ably aided in his account by Wayne Coffey, a veteran sports columnist for the New York Daily News. Coffey has several sports titles to his credit, both for adults and kids. I recently spoke with him about the sensitivity needed for a project such as this, and the potential danger of having a collaborator truly tell all.
Wayne Coffey, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Thanks, Ron. Pleasure to be with you.
So where did you get on board with this project? Did they come to you? Did you go to them? What was the connection?
The actual genesis of the project, Ron, was with the literary agent Esther Newberg, who had read about R.A. and become intrigued by him and his background, and became a believer in the book possibilities of R.A.'s memoirs. So they connected, and then they went. Esther went hunting for a writer, and that search led her to me, and to a meeting between R.A. and myself, and that was late in the 2010 season, and off we went.
Now, at what point did you come to realize what this book would include? When the news came out that he was writing a book, I mean, it's frequently big news when a player decides to come out with a book, and in his case, he has a reputation as a somewhat more intellectual player than most. But the prior to publication, a few weeks ago, when the news that they would include discussion of his sexual abuse as a child, at what point did that come into the play?
First meeting. It was really a remarkable conversation, and it became clear to me right at the outset. I mean, in baseball terms, Ron, it was the first pitch in the top of the first that R.A. talked about his commitment to telling the truth and to use one of his favorite words, to being authentic. And he had felt as though he had spent a lifetime running and hiding from his shame, from his pain, from, you know, all of this, these hideous things he had been carrying around for more than a quarter of a century. And for him, the book was part of the catharsis, and in a sense, almost part of the therapeutic process. And he shared that with me right at the outset, and I was blown away, to say the least, but also just incredibly impressed by his courage and his willingness to take on things that most people are not willing to take on in print.
Now, with other players, the kind of I want to be respectful about this, the kind of hidden secrets they discuss are more brought on by themselves, like the drug abuse, the womanizing, whatnot. This has got to be a first-timer.
Well, if it's not a first-timer, it's certainly on the short list. I know that in Sugar Ray Leonard, the boxer's memoirs, he had spoken about an abuse situation involving, I think, in a a boxing coach he had along the way. But RA's, in RA's case, and I should say, Ron, that it's when the book came out, as you well know, there was an overwhelming amount of attention paid to him being a victim of sexual abuse, as we knew there would be, and it was a critical and acutely painful part of his life narrative. But it's by no means the only thing that he writes about and takes on in the book. And so that said, he just felt he felt really compelled to want to shine a light on this because he felt that it would not only be helpful to him but helpful to others who might be living with similar kinds of shame and angry feelings and all the rest that he's been dealing with for so many years. So it was really, I think he felt very committed, deeply committed to trying to make a difference and to help people who might be similarly afflicted. And I should tell you too, Ron, I was at a book signing with RA yesterday in Queens at a Barnes & Noble right near St. John's University, and there was a remarkable turnout, especially considering the horrific weather. But beyond that, one of the people online was a gentleman who works on with a nonprofit that helps survivors of sexual abuse, and he was so deeply moved by RA and by RA's candor in the book. He handed him a folder of materials with a personal letter thanking him for what he's done to bring the issue to a spotlight. And I mean, this is exactly why RA was so committed to being completely forthright in his book.
Now, you mentioned before the word catharsis and therapeutic. In listening to his interviews, mostly I've heard him on NPR, where he discusses, and that's exactly what I thought. I was wondering, is this a therapeutic exercise suggested to him by his therapist? And combined with his background, his educational background as an English major, I almost wonder, given that background, why they decided that he should have a co-writer.
I think Ari's a very good writer, and this was a full collaboration. We knocked a lot of things back and forth, and he would write. There's a remarkable story that he tells that in his mind and mine too might be our favorite chapter in the book, where he talks about a decision he made as a full-fledged adult, 31 or 32 year old minor leaguer, that he was going to swim across the Missouri River. I mean, it was beyond dumb and reckless. He would admit that freely now, but he had seen this river every year, staying in his seven straight years in AAA when his career was going nowhere. He'd stay at a hotel on the banks of the Missouri in Council Bluffs, Iowa, I believe, and he decided he was going to swim across it to Omaha. Well, he came within a breath or two of dying in the Missouri River, and he tells that story, and before we had really even gotten started, he sent me 30 pages that he had written about the Missouri River, and it was very compelling stuff. And so, in answer to your question, I think he felt like he just needed another voice. He needed, and as skilled as he is with language, he felt like he needed some assistance in sort of crafting the overall narrative and using some of the storytelling techniques that we employ in the book to try to make it as strong a memoir as it could possibly be.
Now, obviously, you've written several other books on various sports, not just baseball. How was this project for you to work on? What kind of emotional toll did it take on you?
In a sense, it was, first of all, let me just put it this way. This was the most wonderful collaboration I've ever had. Usually when you spend a really intense year and a half with someone, you're ready for a little separation and maybe take a breath, get away a little bit. And with RA, it was, if anything, I almost mourned that we were done, just because the process was so uplifting. And that's the irony here too, Ron. Even though he takes on a lot of powerful, deep, painful things in this book, and including times when he sunk so low he contemplated suicide, you finish this book and you end up feeling hopeful, and you feel like there is possibility in life, and that you can overcome things, and that to me is the beauty of this man. For all that he's been through, he's not dark, he's light. He has hope, and he holds on to hope, and he shares hope. And so in that sense, it didn't take any kind of toll on me. It was enriching. It was uplifting. Now, that's not to say there weren't wrestling matches with language that I didn't have along the way, because that's part of the process. But he just being with him and sharing this journey with him was just the best professional experience I've ever had.
Does your position working with a New York newspaper play into it at all? I mean, I imagine that you had a working relationship with him before working on the book.
Well, I actually, the first time I ever shook his hand and met him was when we met to talk about the book. I can't imagine that I could have or would have done this if I had been, say, the New York Mets beat writer for the Daily News, or had some overt conflict of interest, where being some kind of, you know, entering in a business relationship with a guy I was covering would be very problematical. But because of what I do for the Daily News, which is longer enterprise type pieces and features and kind of all over the yard sports wise, it didn't preclude me from being able to take this on.
When I spoke recently with Phil Pepe, he described the difficulty of going back and forth he's written many, many books, between going back and forth between writing books and working on a newspaper, because even though you write longer pieces, there's a certain amount of brevity required in newspaper journalism as opposed to full books. Do you find a difficulty going back and forth?
There's a lot of difficulty, and it's almost as if you have to rewire the circuits in your brain, because wherever I wind up, the book with R.A. Dickey is 92,000 words, and if I write a two-page spread called The End Zone in the Daily News, that might be 1,800 or 1,900 words. So there's 90,000 words difference, and so the way that I often put it is that you have to, when you're writing a book length, you have time to let it breathe. You know, you don't have to feel a rush to get to the point, to explain to people why they're reading this. They're ready to kind of go on a journey with you, whereas because of the constraints of space in a newspaper piece, you've got to get right to it in a sense, even when you're writing a longer feature. So that does take some rewiring. As I said, you need to just reprogram yourself and say, wait a minute, this is not, I don't have 1,800 words here. I've got 92,000, and I'm going to try to tell this story in the right way.
Now, that's from your perspective. What about the non-writer's perspective that you work with, in this case, R.A., who were there things in there that he wanted to include that were not, for one reason or another, either because it would make the book longer or other reasons?
No, we were in complete agreement about everything, really, about what was going to go in. And as I said, he was so committed to being honest. Usually the issue with these sorts of things is that the athlete, the celebrity, doesn't want to have things out there. So the first, if not the first meeting, in one of the first few meetings, they will tick off a list of all of the things that are off limits. And we never had that conversation. And if anything, R.A. said to me at one point, we were sitting in the in a little room in the clubhouse in Citi Field, and he said to me, you know, please let me know if you ever think I'm being too honest. And, you know, that's pretty close to writer heaven to hear those words, because I said, you know, I don't think that's ever going to be an issue, R.A., but if I think that there are things that you were, you're getting into that, that might, you know, hurt you in some way down the line, or that not really a part of the larger narrative, then I'll tell you for sure.
Have you discussed with him what kind of reaction he's received from his fellow players?
Sure, I have, and it's been overwhelmingly positive. I'm not sure that if you went around the Met Clubhouse and did a survey, what percentage of them have read it, but I'm sure most of them have seen the excerpts, they've seen some of the more sensationalized elements of it, and but he's just held in the highest of regard, and that's because he's just a tremendous teammate. He's incredibly supportive. He's just he's as good-hearted and giving a person as you will ever meet. So if somebody is down, if somebody's struggling in any way, or and he's had a lot of downs, and this is a guy who people forget now because he's become such a mainstay and really one of the most reliable pitchers in the National League over the last couple of years, that 2 years ago he was in Buffalo, New York, pitching in AAA, his 14th season in the minor league, sleeping on an inflatable mattress that he bought at Walmart. And that wasn't 10 years ago, that was 2 years ago, at age 35, wondering, maybe it's time for me to go teach high school English. So this guy has had some seriously hard knocks, and the gratitude that has built in him, and the humility that he has in him from his profound faith, I think make him as good a teammate as any big leaguer could ever have.
When it comes to printing excerpts from the book, where does that come from? Whose decision is that? Is that the publisher's decision?
Ultimately, it's a collaborative decision. In the case of the Sports Illustrated excerpt, they reviewed the galleys, the early version of the manuscript, and looked at the things that they thought would work best in a condensed form, and then they excerpted it, and then they knocked it over to us and say, here's what we'd like to run. What do you think? And we might make a suggestion and go back and forth. So it's kind of a community process, but we were all in agreement at the end and with what they did and how they presented it, and it was very similar with the Daily News excerpt that we ran.
Because one of the things I thought of when I first heard about the abuse part being so prominent was previous books. There was a book a couple of years ago by Selena Roberts about Alex Rodriguez. There was Joe Torre's book, where the things that were excerpted were quite sensational, but in comparison with the rest of the book, they were all just a small portion, and here it seems to be a mainstay of the book, and I wonder, is that a good thing, a bad thing, to get people to read the entire book? I don't know if I'm expressing that properly, but you were ultimately happy with the way all that came out. It didn't hurt the book.
No, it didn't hurt the book, and I think that I might disagree to a little extent. It's not when you read Wherever I Wind Up, it's not as if you're reading like tens of thousands of words about sexual abuse. It was in a lot of ways, I mean, the most painful time in his life, but it happened when he was 8 years old, and certainly there was tremendous fallout emotionally, psychologically from that. How could there not be? But the book then kind of takes you on R.A.'s journey as he tries to cope with it. But it is not remotely a book about about sexual abuse. So, you know, and as far as excerpts carrying, kind of being front-loaded with some of the more hot and spicy elements, I mean, that's just sort of the nature of that beast. You know, I remember when Sports Illustrated excerpted the Andre Agassi book, which was a wonderful book called Open. They had one of the stories that they told, perhaps that they gave more time to than anything, was a confrontation between Andre Agassi's father and his wife Steffi Graf's father, and both of them were strong-willed men, to put it kindly, and they ended up like taking their shirts off and were ready to have a fist fight. I mean, it was an incredible scene and story, but again, it's probably 750 or words or 1,000 words in a 100,000-page book, and that's what got the big airtime in Sports Illustrated. So, but it all helps if it's a compelling story and it somehow enlightens and informs and entertains readers and draws people to the story, then it served its purpose.
I want to switch gears a bit and talk a little bit more about your process. Now, you've been writing for quite a while now. How has the job changed for you in terms of how you do your research, how you even write? Years ago, prior to computers, you know, people were writing out longhand and or typing on typewriters, and that certainly has to have a difference in how the process is done.
Oh, it's hard to even compare. I never was much of a longhand writer, but I do remember, you know, the gleeful moment when I got my first IBM Selectric with a self-correcting ribbon, you know, where you could backspace and white out a messed up word or letter. And I thought this was, you know, one of the wonders of the world. And from there, I went to a little flat, the Radio Shack, with an 8-line screen that you just put a bunch of AA batteries in, and you know, and that too was to me the be all and the end all. And I mean, I find technology and the way that it's changed to be tremendously freeing, because it's so easy to move sentences and paragraphs and words around now that you can play with things a little more. You free yourself up and say, I'm just going to write this sentence and then another sentence and then another sentence, and we'll see how it goes. And if I don't like it, I can push a button or I can rearrange them. So I find creatively that it's the process is much freer than it used to be.
And what about the topics? I mean, again, you've written about lots of different sports. One of the standard phrases about baseball is that it lends itself more to literature than other sports. Do you find one sport more easy to write about than others?
I'm not sure that I do, Ron. I think for me, it's the story that drives it. It's the personal narrative. I did a book that came out in 2005, I guess, called The Boys of Winter, about the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team in Lake Placid. And shortly after the book came out, the movie Miracle came out. So now everybody knows that the U.S. beat the Russians, and it was the sports moment of the century, and they had no chance to win, and they won. So for me, that was a very interesting project to take on, just because I wanted to find a way to make it a compelling story, even though people knew the outcome. And the way that you do that is tell the stories of the people who were behind the miracle. So I went around the country and I interviewed the players on the team. I went to Russia and interviewed some of the Russian coach and some of the Russian stars on the team who were on the receiving end of the miracle, if you will. And I just find that no matter what sport you're writing about, if you can try to tunnel into the deeper human story, the drama, the feelings behind it, the emotional power that underlies the digits on the scoreboard, that's where you're gonna make your hay, and where you're gonna find something you can really dig into. So it could be about badminton, it could be about baseball. To me, what ultimately drives a story is the sort of human condition that undergirds it.
Do you have anything in the hopper now for your next project?
There's a couple of things on the old drawing board. We've not decided anything. At this point, we're still busy in go mode with R.A. Dickey trying to support it and promote it and let people know what a great guy he is, and the reviews honestly have been so overwhelmingly positive that the book is really finding its way. So that's made for a lot of time and work, but happy work. So. I'm still kind of hunting around, and you know, it's almost, in a sense, finding a topic for a book is finding a partner in life, Ron. You know, you can't really define the process, but you know it when you see it and when you find it, and that's what I. So I've got a couple of things that are vying for my attention right now, but I don't have that 100% gut feeling like this is the one. But that'll happen soon, I think.
Oh, hope so. We've been talking with Wayne Coffey, who with R.A. Dickey has written the wonderful book, Wherever I Wind Up, My Quest for Truth, Authenticity, and the Perfect Knuckleball. Wayne, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ron. Pleasure to be with you.
Dickey, who is thus far having an all-star caliber season, will be at the Yogi Bear Museum on the campus of Montclair State University in Little Falls, New Jersey, on Thursday, June 21st from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Coffey will be on assignment covering the U.S. Olympic trials, but hopes to be able to make the event. For information or to pre-order, call 973-655-2378. And one other note that I forgot to mention in the intro, Wherever I Wind Up was on the New York Times bestseller list for April 29th. Well, that about brings us to the end of another podcast edition of the Baseball Bookshelf. This week we'll be turning them out rather rapidly with several books that are just in time for Father's Day, as well as an interview with Marty Appel, who will also be at the Yogi Berra Museum this month, for his book on Pinstripe Empire. Remember, we love your comments and questions, so please send us an email at ron@ronkaplansbaseballbookshelf.com. So long, everybody.
Yeah.